Jack Ablin is the Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital. Jack, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for the invitation.
Overview of the markets and the yields right now. What's your headline today?
Conflicting signals. We had a very strong retail sales report, which sort of sets the Fed back a little bit in their effort to quell inflation. Meanwhile, of course, interest rates rose to their highest level since 2007 in response to that strength. And yet, in spite of it, equities are rallying with small cap stocks, which are typically most sensitive to credit conditions, rallying the most today.
And how do you explain that?
Well, it's a little bit of backward. I think a lot of it is that the strength of the consumer is a domestic phenomenon that will help smaller businesses relative to the larger ones, I suppose. If you break down the retail sales activity, a lot of it was just store retail, and that's brick and mortar. So that's good news. And then auto dealers, new car sales and service and parts. So all in all, pretty good. And then people are still going out for food and drink.
Yeah. And it doesn't make any sense to discourage spending in that you're spending it on businesses. This is good news for businesses. But to the degree that drives inflation, that just forces the Fed to keep doing what they're doing, right?
That's it. And I think the issue is now we have to really dig down deep into, who's doing the spending and what categories. And, we have to keep in mind that, the top income earners are really not necessarily swayed by, high oil prices or even, higher interest to some degree. And I think that's really what's probably driving a lot of the spending. And unfortunately, if the Fed really wants the top earners to stop spending, they're going to have to see some sort of deterioration in their wealth effect, meaning the value of their home, perhaps, or at least the perceived value of the home comes down,
right,
or their stock portfolio value has to come down, neither of which is happening right now.
Well, is there any other way to tame inflation other than interest rates?
It's really difficult to do with the Fed's single blunt instrument to do it. Perhaps they could, impose some sort of a fiscal policy if the tax rate were to go up or oil prices, pump prices really were to skyrocket. But I think short of that, we'd have to see some sort of, deterioration in, like I said, the wealth effect, that if high-income households feel that perhaps they're not as wealthy as they believed, that could start to trim spending.
And whatever the Fed thinks about my question, they only have one tool in their box pretty much anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, they could certainly buy and sell treasuries, which they're doing, and part of the reason why the intermediate term, the 10-year treasury yield, is as high as it is the Fed is selling between $40 and $60 billion of treasuries a month. And that, coupled with a huge supply because of the deficits, mm-hmm. is now seeing less demand.
The Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital, crescentcapital.com, is Jack Ablin. Okay, Jack, we'll check in again soon. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thank you.
Philip Weiss, the president of SciFarth at Work, has advice for those of you thinking about offering constructive criticism to the boss. Is this a new idea here, Philip?
Yeah, it's been around, but it is gaining traction, John, among a fair number of employers that we work with in an effort to further engage employees, particularly those who are being asked to return to the office on a more permanent basis and more frequent basis. Bosses are saying, hey, not only is my door open, but my ears are open to hear whatever criticisms or concerns you have about me. This is one of these easier said and offered than done realities, because companies and bosses in particular are often caught off guard when they tell employees, I want to hear the down and dirty on what I'm doing wrong.
Well, is that you say this has maybe been prompted by the work from home strategy? Is that what's pushing this?
Yeah, you know, it's one of the factors, John. You know, we've, as you know, been through a fairly volatile time, and employee engagement and creating a positive and welcoming environment is something that many companies are placing at the top of their mission and to-do lists. So they're looking for any creative and novel avenues to accomplish just that, and thinking that employees can freely or should be able to freely critique the boss to the boss is just one of these ideas they've been testing,
yeah,
but with some unexpected results.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, the idea here is one can easily step into a workplace or career pothole and really blunder that moment if they don't know how to handle it on either side of the equation. And one example, for example, as a reference, a client that came to us for training dealt with a situation where the boss said to his underlings, whatever you want to tell me about what I'm doing, right or wrong, I'm setting up meetings, you know, just bear it all. And the first employee that showed up said, well, I'm so glad you finally asked me because I cannot stand the plants, the foliage you have dotting our entire office. You know, if I wanted to live in the forest, I'd been a park ranger. Can you get rid of some of this stuff? It's just annoying to look at. Unbeknownst to him, John, it was the boss's own wife who had painstakingly and lovingly placed all these this foliage and these plants several years before, and it was kind of a point of pride for the boss. So that really kind of took some luster off of that boss-employee relationship and the ability to candidly share ideas. So this is one of these examples where, you know, the boss has got to be cautious and the employee's got to do their homework before letting loose with the complaints.
Yeah. My first question would have been, hey, who did the landscaping? And then yeah. I might have offered some opinion. But I would imagine that previously you would have told your immediate supervisor. I don't know how many, you know, levels there are at Company X, but is the idea that I'm telling my supervisor or I'm telling the general manager?
Yeah. This is really kind of the core of what you might call a good feedback system. Because the reality is, if it is something truly serious, let's say it's a policy violation or a code violation or really over-the-top harsh management by your own boss, companies should have multiple places to go and an open-door policy, meaning you should be able to, in essence, go around the person who's the problem and talk to someone you can trust or anonymously complain. So the idea of having complaint channels is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of telling employees, whatever's on your mind that you don't like about me or my management, just let me know all of it. That becomes far more problematic because what it does for employees who are really willing to talk is it gives them this open space to say more than what really will help the company improve. And if not carefully navigated, can harm that boss-employee relationship. So you want to have many avenues. You want to ask for input, but you want to also do it in a very constructive, positive way.
I don't have a full minute here now, Philip, but do you think that HR departments work for the company's benefit, or do you think HR departments actually exercise some muscle for the employees?
Yeah. I mean, they're obviously employed by the company, John. The company's protection is one of their primary goals. But organizations that do well understand that often the best legal or compliance defense is also the best practice that supports employees, that gives them opportunities, that gives them protection. So the two can go hand in hand and should. But to your question, HR represents the company at the end of the day.
Philip Weiss is the president of SeyFarth at Work, SeyFarth, SeyFarth at Work. Philip, it's always interesting to talk to you. Thanks today.
Thank you, John.
Cork Gaines, correspondent at Business Insider. Cork, it's John, and you're on WGN. Hi.
Howdy. Thanks for having me.
So baby boomers are those people between the ages of, say, 59 and 77 who whatever is driving the inflation number high and keeping interest rates as a result up, we might say it's in part their fault, right? Baby boomers are spending their money, correct?
That's correct. You know, it's kind of, you know, one of the things is this generation, which we always knew was coming, and they were going to hit their retirement years. We were originally, you know, kind of concerned that they would not be spending their money, that they would be more conservative with, you know, their checking accounts, their savings accounts, their retirement investments and stuff like that. But we're seeing just kind of the opposite. They're doing more of a kind of a live for today sort of thing, and they have a lot of money to spend right now.
How much? I mean, can you quantify some of this?
The estimates are somewhere in the upper $70 trillion. I mean, it's a big nest egg to put it lightly. And I think the last number I heard was 75 to 78 or something like that. And you know, they're kind of immune to all the stresses that are happening right now in the economy because of their situation, because of how you know, they've gotten ahead of it. You know, things like. They're well invested in real estate with their houses. Many of them are, you know, free and clear with their houses, and they're, you know, taking advantage of these, you know, the growth in the housing market, but not worrying about having to get into a new mortgage because there's less pressure for older people to have to move for family or for jobs or wherever it is. So, you know, they're kind of living the high life right now.
And some of them have been the beneficiaries of a rising stock market, however flat it is this year. Remember, they were buying stocks in the 1970s and 80s, some of them, 90s, 2000s. So they have been the beneficiaries of that rising tide. And we're talking about, what's the percent, about a fifth of the U.S. population?
Yeah, it's a big chunk of the population. You know, the other concern that we had as this group got older is we just assumed that they would all stop contributing to the economy, right? We thought they're all going to hit retirement age and they're going to retire and go off in the sunset and hog, you know, keep all their money tied underneath their, you know, mattresses or whatever. That's not the case. A lot of these older people are staying in the workforce and they're still contributing. So they've got kind of this double whammy that we thought was going to hurt the economy is actually kind of helping.
Yeah. And save it for their kids and grandkids. Hello. But no, they're going on cruises.
They are. Although I think the estimates are that that nest egg is big enough that there is going to be a big handoff to the younger generation once they get older.
Interesting. Well, I think the idea is, I mean, when they'll show you the sort of projections, the idea is to have $1 left the day you die. And if you want to save more for your kids, great, but just don't outlive your money. And while some do, it appears as though they're positioned to have sufficient funds for their care to whatever degree they can afford it. It's the next generations that you wonder about. But in the meantime, your point in this report is that the baby boomers are spending money and maybe more than we expected, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's, you know, the big thing that's kind of kept this economy afloat. And it's not just, you know, I made the reference in the headline to, you know, the Taylor Swift concerts and everything else. I mean, you know, this summer of fun and this summer, you know, what some people are calling funflation, where people are just, you know, people were kind of, they were tucked away in their houses during the pandemic. Now they, you know, they got cabin fever, they got out. Now everybody just wants to have a good time and wants to get out and have experiences and stuff like that. And that was great this summer with all the concerts and the movies and everything else and the vacations that people were taking. But now that that's starting to slow down, you know, there was the worry that, you know, the spending would go away. But, you know, it seems like the baby boomer generation, those older generations are going to, you know, help keep things afloat, and they're spending the money freely.
Well, I haven't heard that phrase before, or word funflation, but evidently that's an apt description. Attention, baby boomers with $75 trillion, slow your spending, please. It will, I got to go here, but that would help, right? In terms
that,
of...
That is the flip side to all this, right? You know, the whole thing the Fed's trying to do right now is to get people to kind of slow down their spending, to slow down the economy. The economy's been running a little bit too hot, causing the inflation. And right now, if both baby boomers keep spending, there's that concern that the economy won't slow down enough.
Cork Gaines is a correspondent with BusinessInsider.com. Cork, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Pharmacy staff at Deerfield-based Walgreens across the country are planning another nationwide walkout, a walkout scheduled for October 30th and November 1st. Staff at some Walgreens locations in Washington, Arizona, Oregon, and Massachusetts walked off the job last week. The employees say they're understaffed and overworked and claim the situation is impacting safety. They say they've been dealing with understaffed teams and increasing work expectations for years. Governor Pritzker says he'll veto any legislation that would tax Chicago's financial exchanges and trading firms. The governor told Bloomberg News there's no financial transactions tax on the table, period. He was responding to speculation about Mayor Johnson's plan to raise revenue for Chicago. The city faces a budget gap of more than $500 million. The mayor has suggested a levy on securities trading, and executives from the city's largest exchanges warned a transaction tax would force them to leave Chicago. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here is the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Thank you, and let's begin with this.
I'll have what she's having.
Remember that movie? And more importantly to what we're talking about for the next couple of minutes, do you remember where that line was said? We're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com. It's truck season. Put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay.
I'll have what she's having.
Yeah, that's the iconic line from When Harry Met Sally, which was filmed in a Jewish deli in Manhattan, Katz's. And Jewish delis are the focus of an exhibition that opens this weekend in Skokie at the Illinois Holocaust Museum, titled
I'll Have What She's Having, The Jewish Deli.
That is Ariel Weininger, the chief curator of collections and exhibitions at the Illinois Holocaust Museum.
It highlights this wonderful traditional Ashkenazi Central and Eastern European Jewish cuisine and how in the aftermath of the Holocaust, these stores, the businesses, the restaurants became central to survivors' lives in the United States.
And there's plenty of Chicago Jewish deli history in the exhibition.
There is Kaufman's, which still is in Skokie. That was originally opened by Maury Kaufman, who was a survivor. The Bagel is something that was opened by four Holocaust survivors. We have created a brand new movie to highlight these stories in the exhibition, and it was filmed at Kaufman's, Manny's, and the Bagel. We will be highlighting a very big sign from Nate's Deli. This is a deli that existed on Maxwell Street. S. Rosen and their rye bread and their hot dog buns is featured in the exhibition. Vienna Beef is going to be well represented, which was, you know, when it first opened, a kosher meat supplier. So all of these types of stories are going to be highlighted throughout the exhibition.
I'll have what she's having. The Jewish Deli opens Sunday, the 22nd, at the Illinois Holocaust Museum in Skokie, and opening day will include food from Once Upon a Bagel. You can find out more at
ilholocaustmuseum.org.
From the farm to your belly, today's National Pasta Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
There's Katie Anderson Tedder, the manager at Anderson's Candy Shop on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hey, Katie, it's John. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me on.
Well, we love to visit with the businesses throughout Chicagoland. Yours is certainly one of them. How are things going this fall?
Really well. We are about halfway through our very busy caramel apple season. We make about between 8,000 and 9,000 apples during a seven-week period here during the fall. We make our own caramel and get apples picked right up the road from our shop in Richmond. So that is monopolizing a lot of my time right now. Trips to the orchard, making caramel, and helping people with that. And of course, a little bit of Halloween chocolate and preparing for our major season ahead, the fall winter holidays. So we're doing really well out here in Richmond and Barrington. So, I don't want to leave out my Barrington folks.
No. I get up there now and again. I got a dentist up there. I could go see you and then see him, or go see him and then see you.
mutual job security. We provide each other.
Isn't that the truth? But then the holidays. So do you do a lot of Christmas time as well?
Yes. So for our business, about 64% of my budget I make between November and December. So that is really the majorly important time of year for us. And I begin work on that now in order to be able to get the supplies, get my team coordinated, and make all of the chocolates and fudges and things that we're going to sell during the winter holidays.
And I think of you as obviously a candy store, special occasion, gifts, or, hey, let's go get some fudge. but I don't imagine you're a Halloween destination.
Not too much. A lot of the people use, you know, kind of the big box stores. I love Tootsie Rolls, that kind of thing to hand out to the kids. We do have some folks who will use, like, our caramel apples for a party, or maybe, you know, if they want to do something for their grandkids, we do have chocolate Frankenstein, solid chocolate spiders, solid chocolate skeletons. We use our antique metal molds here to make those. So those are really special, but we're not selling thousands of those. Our business is in its 104th year this fall. So there's definitely a small crowd that we provide things to for that nature, but mostly we leave the Halloween candy to the big box stores.
Do you ship stuff? Are people sending boxes of Anderson's at Christmas or Thanksgiving?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we ship all over the country. So we have a website. It's Anderson's with an S, candyshop.com. And we ship in Illinois. We ship to Alaska. Anywhere you can think of in the country, we ship year-round. Right now, sometimes we're helping the faraway college kids get a little taste of home as they kind of try to make it to fall break. But yeah, we ship corporate gifts, family gifts during November and December all over the country. Mm-hmm.
And what's your number one selling item?
So if it's a gift, it would be our deluxe assortment. So that is a one-pound box of 32 of our chocolates that we make here from scratch in the building. Things like caramel, nougat, butterscotch, buttercream, marzipan, chocolate-dipped fruits and nuts all together in a beautiful box. We do several thousands of those a month when we get to the winter holidays. And then if for more of an individual treat, probably our Lars bar is our most popular chocolate. And that is our version of a turtle. We take an old, very old divinity recipe. We add our own caramel to that, dip it in chocolate, and lay it in a bed of fresh chopped pecans. And it's one of those things where you take a bite and kid yourself that you're going to save the rest for later, and then you look down again and it's gone. Those would probably be the two most popular things.
It's kind of funny, isn't it? Because I think we know the major big candy companies in the country. Are you competing with them, Katie? How do you survive when there's all of those big companies?
That's such a good question, John. And it's one that we kind of revisit. And I think a lot about our identity as a shop. So we're here for the clients who need us, who recognize that they want something that is well-sourced quality ingredients, where it's going to taste like what you paid for. And people like corporate gifts, for example, the clients that we have, the lawyers or the construction worker crews, the people that choose us to represent them with gifts at the holiday time, they're not paying lip service to the people they're giving gifts to. They want to give something of quality that's meaningful, that's mm-hmm. delicious, because that it's representing them and their brand, and they want it to mean something. So anytime our costs, our ingredient costs go up, our labor costs go up, gosh, that's been going on a lot the last few years. But I reevaluate, you know, what am I doing here? What ingredients am I using? What are my processes? And I say, no, there is still a market for people who want something of value, something that tastes good. And so I think that's our niche. We have our following, and there are people out there who look for that and want that. And I feel like that's something that's the same now as it was 100 years ago. And there's always going to be a time and a place for my product. One of the big jobs I have is sustaining that and then reaching out to people and letting people know, hey, we're here and we're committed to still doing this.
That's well put. We're out of time now, but I think another thing that works for you, if I do a commercial for you on the radio, ask us to remind people how involved you are in the community. You are sometimes promoting events that only tangentially benefit you, and I think that tells me something about this company, and I think that's smart. I think it's sincere, but I think it's smart. So good on you on that, Katie.
I appreciate that, John. That's something my dad taught me. He passed away a few years ago, and he's our third generation owner. And yeah, if there is a corn maze, a car show, right, a fundraiser in our area, it gives you an excuse to spend more time and come see us. But We believe all ships like rise with the tide, you know, and that it's our job to be a part of making this community thrive. And, and it's worth it. It's totally worth it to me. And I appreciate that you recognize that. Thank you, John.
A caramel tide. Katie Anderson Tedder, manager at Anderson's Candy Shop, AndersonsCandyShop.com. Okay, Katie, have a great season.
Thank you. Take care, John.